You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 256 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Hands On Gloves, the all-in-one revolutionary bathing, grooming, shedding gloves. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network, and today we have people from ends of the earth meeting and having a good time. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thanks for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month. It's the 1st that this is coming out on, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Greetings, Debbie, professional podcaster.
Yeah, it's true. I have a studio that travels with me. Do you know what it is?
Tell me.
It's a Toyota. It's
coming to you live from a Toyota.
I'm sitting in a Toyota as we just for the segues, but that's just for our part together, right? I'm parked in Orange County somewhere, and not in Florida, Orange County, but in.
Well, that's true. We have an Orange County too.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. Sometimes people get it confused with when I say I'm in Orange County, but I'm in Orange County, Southern California, and I'm traveling today back to Santa Barbara, where I get to meet with some lovely people. I'm meeting with a lady who's from Argentina, living in Malibu right now, who has horses and is talking to us about going to Argentina. That's part of the meeting. The other part of the meeting is about working with some people that love horses and also are put on events. So they're helping me with the movement.
And
yay. Yeah. And, you know, I think Gwyneth Paltrow is supposed to be there because this is one of those big get-togethers for people who put on events. And she has product lines, you know, so I'll let you know if we get to chat with Gwyneth.
Oh, neat. How fun.
I know. There's possibility.
Yeah. So, well, we have two really interesting guests, and because you're a grown-up, you even have your very own mobile studio podcaster.
Yes.
You recorded these two without me. Oh, no. I was hanging out with Katarina. But
yes.
Two really interesting people with... It's so fun when we talk to people from quite literally all over the world.
Yes.
On this show. How invariably we're more alike than we're different when it comes to our horses.
Well, horses. It is the theme. Now, very interesting combination of people that we have on the show today, because Katarina, who you helped us record with her, Kofid, is from Sweden originally, so you'll hear the Swedish accent. But and Sweden and that whole Scandinavia area, Northern Europe, are really kind to their horses, and they're good. They're very coachable. They're good students, and they really seek out the best for their horses. Always have since I've been acquainted with horse people, which is a long time. and then we've got Simao, who Katarina is now living in Texas, of all places.
So she's going to have a Swedish Texas accent pretty soon.
A Swedish drawl, maybe. I'm not sure.
Swedish drawl. That sounds like the name of a cutting horse.
That's a good one. But she's coming out for the movement. So we wanted to talk to her about a little bit about how she has studied horses neurologically. Well, I'll describe a little bit about her and then you'll get to hear her tell her story. But Simão is from Portugal and he literally got off a plane from Lisbon to LAX and showed up at this class, a Monty special training that we had last week. And lovely man who's making an AI movie futuristic about horses. Now, if that's not an interesting combination of factoids, I don't know what is. So I had to sit down with him and talk to him about that too. And that's why he was out here studying horses.
Well, before we get to our first guest, we always have a little chat about Hands On Gloves because they are our title sponsor after all. And you had mentioned something a little earlier about a mare you had there at the farm that could benefit from some new techniques with the Hands On Gloves.
Yes, I loved you. We were talking about Hands On Gloves being so clever. There's so many different things about them that we love. But the one thing this poor mare is always suffering from are the little drip drips off the belly when we wash her. And she's such a sweetheart. She really puts up with a lot. But for her, you can just tell it's like super ticklish, like there was flies all over her belly. And it's not, it's just the little water drops, you know. But even after you scrape her off, you know how the water creeps down under there and it drips a few more it drives her bananas. And you told me about a video that showed a guy who had thrown a towel over his dog in this case. But, you know, before you put it back in the car, you get out a towel. But for those who, you know, want to really be able to grip the towel and really get a good job done of drying the dog or the horse in this case, and I could really reach under a belly by putting on my hands-on gloves, grabbing the towel, and, you know, I don't have to hold it very hard if I can scrub under her tummy with that towel and get those last little bits of moisture out of there so it doesn't bother her.
We've all taken the towel and we dry some part of the horse with the towel. Mm-hmm. Well, the towel dries the top of the hair.
Right.
Right. It does, especially as their hair gets a little heavier in the wintertime.
Yeah, here we are.
It doesn't get down. And it's like trying to wash your hand without using your hair, without washing using your fingertips. It doesn't work.
Exactly, Jen. That's a perfect analogy because I can't get in there, especially under the belly. You know, it's kind of loose skin. And Yeah.
That's perfect. Brilliant. So washing your horse, give him a quick scrape, and you've already got your hands on glove on anyway because you're using that to scrub your horse.
Yep.
Well, just grab the towel in your hand. Give the tummy a rub, give the legs, and what a great way to also get the legs and fetlocks and coronets really, really dry because that's going to ward off scratches.
Yes, that's another thing that we can get here in the tall grasses. And she is a pasture horse, but she's absolutely lovely. And she loves her spa days and loves her grooming, but she hates her little drip drops.
There we go.
Her tummy.
Yet another, we're going to have to develop a pamphlet, 101 useful ways that you can use your.
I'm telling you, every time you get horse girls together and you talk about hands-on gloves, we come up with a new one almost every time.
Every time. Well, you can find out more at handsongloves.com or you can find them at your local retailer.
Katarina Kofed is really an anatomical fitting genius, but she has over 15 years experience in the medical device business and her company is Pure Equestrian.
Well, welcome, Katarina Kofod. I'm excited to have you on the show today because you're talking about a subject I don't think we've actually covered out of 250 plus episodes right now as we speak. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. So I got a few words in there. Maybe people can tell that you're originally from Sweden. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I still have my accent. I live in Texas, but I just can't get that Texas accent yet.
What is it that you're making the rounds in Texas doing?
So I work with to fit saddles and bridles in all disciplines, really, with a focus on dressage and jumpers, but also eventers. And I've actually seen a couple of Western clients as well. So,
is there? Yeah. Okay. There shouldn't be a few in Fort Worth. I would think too. No. It's the same horse head, though, isn't it? Same horse body.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I know your background is medical, but let's start with a little bit of historical. I always like to find out a little bit about how somebody grows up with horses or whether they got into horses later in life. What's your backstory on your horses?
So I grew up on a farm in Sweden, and I got my first horse when I was about 6 years old. And my mom is a dressage rider, so that's how it all started. My dad was never fond of the horses. He paid for them.
Yeah.
But he was more he liked the horsepower of cars and motocross, etc. So, but it was me and my mom. And then my brothers and my dad like more the horsepower and engines.
Yeah.
So that's how it started.
Yeah. So your love of horse was this something that was just because you're on a farm, you have horses around, or was it something you were drawn to?
It was something I love animals, and it was something I was drawn to. But I have to thank my mom for that. She was the one who introduced the horses into my life. And I've had them ever since.
That's awesome.
It sort of, yeah.
Good for the brain, for sure. But it wasn't going to be your living at first. How did you get into the medical field?
So long story short, so initially I wanted to become a veterinarian, to be honest. But then it was quite tricky. I had good grades, but you had to have top-notch grades. So I didn't manage to get in. And then I said to myself, I need a university degree. So then I studied economics. So I have an MBA. And that's, but the horses were always with me. And then there was an opportunity in medical device and I really enjoyed it. It was super fun. And I actually, during the medical device years, we actually had anesthesia machines for animals, not necessarily horses. They couldn't really manage those kind of sizes, but we also had high-speed drills, etc. And it's the same kind of equipment that orthopedic that they use in the human field, actually. So that's how it sort of evolved. So
And I love that you moved to Texas in all of this. Why Texas? Is that where the business is for medical devices?
So actually, I had an opportunity. I was in Sweden. It was a promotion within the same company. And they said, so Katarina, you can move either to Malmö, Sweden, or there was a town in the UK, or San Antonio, Texas.
Oh.
And I'd been to Texas one time. And I thought it was quite nice. It was 3 days at the Congress. Then I thought, well, my daughter, she's six. If we're going to do this big move, it's going to be now. So then I thought, why not? And I also actually at the time, which is quite funny, there was a documentary from Pilot Point, which is actually a little bit of the horse mecca here in Texas, where there were such nice, it really caught my eye because they had sandy loam, there were horses everywhere, ranches everywhere. So that was actually one of the reasons. That was one of the things that actually drew my attention to Texas, to be honest.
That is interesting from a documentary.
Yeah.
Makes sense. A lot of different. Do you feel like the horse? I feel like Sweden and that whole Scandinavian area believes that they are one of the instigators famous for treating horses well, all over, you know, compared to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I must agree. And I didn't think about it until I moved somewhere else, so to speak. I've been a lot in Sweden. I have a lot of friends in the UK. So as a 14 and 15 year old, I spent summers. Also have the same kind of horsemanship as I'm used to. But yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's basics. Really, you know, that you feed them, they get fed properly, the fresh water, that you get turnouts and all of that. And in Sweden, you're not allowed to have just one horse.
Oh,
it's forbidden. So you need to have more than one since they're herd animals.
And as a trainer, are you needing to be certified in order to hang up a shingle and be a business person in training?
Yes, you do. Yes, absolutely.
I think that surprises people in the U.S. sometimes that not only basic care is not always basic and pervasive, but also the fact that trainers need to be trained to pass the certification to train is remarkable to people in the U.S. sometimes.
Yeah.
It's good.
So. Yeah,
that's good. I think we're getting there. I wanted to get into how you got into the medical devices and crossover to horses, because this is where we see the direction progressively with extrinsic, let's call it extrinsic pieces that we hang on our horse, whether it's something on their head or something on their back or, and we'll get into a little bit of the therapy part of it too, that I think, you know, this completes the circle for me in what your background is. And it's fascinating to me that you've got so many areas of
expertise in this too. And the first thing I wanted to say to you is it doesn't surprise me that most of this extrinsic equipment or these things that you're doing with horses is German engineered, because I think on the farm, the most progressive stuff we have comes from Germany. We have Rohrer and Rube, a Eurosizer, a 12-horse Eurosizer that runs on an oval, which is unusual. And we have a we've been very pleased with the products that Germany is putting out for horses, because they're so well thought through. And and I know you're from Sweden, but I know that probably a lot of things you're using are German. So does this meld your medical background and your love for horses in a way that makes it better, a better life for horses?
Yes, I think so. And on, I actually, during my whole, I think I had a career in medical device for 15 plus years. Mm. And during this time, I always wanted to start my own company within towards large animals. So I always had that dream. And if you look at the whole, the medical device field today, almost all the big, the largest corporations, the majority of their, a lot of their equipment are made, still made in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is an, it's very fascinating actually. So, and, but for me to go take the step, so I was a marketing director, in medical device in all different kind of areas. And for me to take the step, I think, I believe sometimes, you know, there is a plan for every person.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And sometimes you just have to follow, you know, what's, and it sometimes it just shows up in front of you, even though you didn't think about it then. And for me, I was here, and then the company decided to move the whole marketing division back to Sweden. Yeah.
Oh.
And I was in Texas. Yes. So then I thought, okay, what do I do now? And I was still looking into possibly continuing my career in global marketing. But then I couldn't really find that kind of desire for a kind of job here. So then I thought, okay, let's take a brainstorming with myself. And I started to look at the product that I really had a passion for in the horse industry. And then I started to contact those companies. Mm-hmm. And luckily, at that time, I don't know if it's luck, it was meant to be, but there was openings in Texas. So that's how it started for me, actually. So it's it just happened. And then I thought initially it was sort of, okay, let's do it as a side thing. So I started my own company. I was a little bit of, I was a consultant for anatomical bridles initially, and then the saddles came in. And then while I'm looking to continue my career in medical device. That was sort of the plan, because I thought that this is, I can probably not live on this. But then there's a lot of demand out there, and there is a lot of unmet needs actually. And a lot of horses that have injuries or are in some kind of pain that's quite easy to fix. So that's how it sort of started for you. I think it's about, 2018. That's when I started. So it's almost 6 years ago now.
Do you feel like some of these injuries are from extrinsic things, from equipment that we're using poorly? Or are we overworking our horses? Or what do you think is causing the need for the you know, massage therapy?
Of course, sometimes it can, of course, be that the horses are worked too hard, etc. But it's like if you as a person, as a sport athlete, are going to perform and you have a helmet that is too tight on your head, or any kind of other shoes that are too small, and then they want you to perform, that's going to create some kind of injuries. And I worked in orthopedics for a very long time. And worked also with a lot of doctors who worked with athletes. So I think actually there is a lot. That's why the thing is, you can buy a very expensive saddle, but if it's not fitted for that horse, it's not going to be good anyway.
Yeah.
And so I think many times it actually can be the equipment, and it's not intentional, of course.
Right.
It's hard to see for the eye. And many of our horses, they tend to work a lot before, even when they are in pain, to be honest.
Yes.
So I think it's both, but I think there is quite some relatively easy fixes and that can prevent it.
Oh, good. That's what I want to hear about, because it's confusing, you know, to us owners.
Yeah.
Who, you know, we hear, well, I mean, sometimes I think a lot of things are added to a problem, and I don't know if maybe we should back off of whatever we think may be causing the issue. And I don't know where to find all the answers all the time. And I'm sure there's a lot of listeners who are, you know, in my shoes too, of it's confusing. How much do we add to it, or how much should we back off whatever we're doing? And, you know, maybe you can be a little bit of a decipher for us on that.
Yeah. I like to back off a little bit. It's what I tell people when I go out, for example, when I do a saddle fitting, I said, okay, do you have a ride your horse bareback? And that's how I started. I always rode bareback. And I said, if you ride your horse bareback, it's going to put you where you're supposed to sit. It's impossible to sit in the wrong spot on a horseback when you ride bareback.
That's true.
And that's where you want the saddle to put you.
Mm. Very good.
And that's quite interesting. It is actually interesting, because many times, and that's not the case.
Mm. Well, there you go. That's a pretty obvious visual. I love that.
Yeah.
What about headgear for them?
Yeah. I grew up in a small little town outside of Stockholm in Sweden called Nyköping. And there's one girl, there's a founder of an anatomical bridle company, and she, I saw her from when she started all her bridles, et cetera, and they looked a little bit clumsy, not as elegant as you're used to. And then 2017, I asked her to San Antonio. She contacted me and said, hey, would you like to try my bridles? And I said, yeah, sure. And she shipped them to me, and I tried them, And it was such a difference.
What was the difference? Do they look different or perform?
Yeah, they do look different. So and there are a lot of different ones out in the market today. Many nice ones. And but the key that I notice is the headpiece or the crown piece.
Okay.
So it's sort of anatomically, it's a little bit wider, but it's also curved out for the ear base. Okay. So it sort of distributes the pressure over the pole. And it doesn't put and it prevents the crown piece to put pressure on the horses have quite sensitive nerves behind the ears, etc.
Yes.
And it takes away that. And I noticed on my horse, he started to relax in his neck. It was very interesting. And
I was just going to say, that sensitivity behind the ears, you know, a lot of people don't even know that. I mean, obviously, if you've ever had an ear shy horse, you wonder what caused that. And it can be caused very little, because they're so sensitive there. You don't want to think people are actually grabbing their ears or anything, but it can. Yeah. So what so you're saying that the that pole part should be set back further away from the ears, or how does it help?
Yeah, so it's basically it's curved for the ear base, so it's sort
around.
Of the leather is curved out. Yes,
okay.
It's shaped so it sort of prevents putting any pressure on the ear base, and it's also it's a little bit wider over the neck, and then there's a channel, so it sort of distributes the pressure. I bought into it, and then they come with all different kind of nose pieces, etc. But I really guess that was the first aha for me.
Yeah,
that made me really, because it's really a difference to ride in it. So
that's awesome. It's one of the things that comes up a lot in conversations we talk about equipment is that we seem to be progressing as a discipline or as an industry, equestrian industry, to hoping that we do better for our horses. And of course, it started off with, you know, let's let's throw something on their back, let's throw something on their head hundreds of years ago, and we didn't know really what we were doing. But now there's so many discoveries, like you're making, smart people like you, that say there's a sensitivity around the ears, or there's a nerve ending right here on the cheek, or whatever it is. But how do you deal with rules in the, you know, in the different, the various disciplines now that say, oh, you must use this kind of equipment, or you can't use that kind of equipment? How do people work around that these days?
I think that in the hunt, so if you look at hunter jumpers, for example, they can, they're not allowed to have them extremely wide, but you can still do them a little bit padded and a little bit wider without sort of catching the, because it's you don't want to get lower scores, etc. But in general, just for the crown piece, to my knowledge, they use them in all disciplines, in also USCF, FBI. So I haven't, that specific part I haven't seen. What I do like a lot is that there is a trend of going away from more and more, you know, when it comes to nose bands, there is a trend actually of not having them at all. And then having less of them. And I like that. Yeah, I do.
I was going to ask you about that too, because that is, sometimes they look severe and sometimes they don't. And, you know, maybe us who are looking at the discipline and not involved in it wonder, you know, how is the horse reacting to that? What does that look like at home when you're training? And do you advocate training in something like, if you had to use a nose band in competition, let's say, do you need to use a nose band at home just to get the horse used to it? Or do people just throw it on for the competitions because they have to? How does that work?
I think there are many different types of nose bands, actually. So some, we have, for example, there's one nose band that's very, very, very kind and gentle, but it's interesting because it's attached to the cheek piece. So because it's attached to the cheek piece, it sort of distributes the pressure from between the bit and the nose band. So for example, I have a really strong horse who and then the nose band is going to help me, and it sits quite high up. But it's like, you know, sometimes you have a halter, like the Duali halter, so then that one is quite, and that one is beneficial. So some horses go really well with those kind of nose bands. And then there are other ones, more traditional ones, where they have a flash, etc. What I like with these bridles that are anatomical is that they are sort of, they are, even the nose bands, they make sure they don't put pressure on the teeth. So they are sort of curved out and they are padded under the cheek. So it's, so there are maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 different nose bands out there. But I do see, as you said, I do see a trend with people, and it's good because there's been a debate about, you know, you see they tighten too much, etc. So, I'm a big fan of having, you know, as a kind bit as possible, you know, all of that. I like that. I think some horses need, of course, a stronger bit for certain types, but I used to train with one Olympic trainer, and he always used to tell me, well, Katarina, if you can start and you can stop and you can turn, then you don't need a stronger bit.
Well, I guess that's true. You have brakes and a steering wheel. That's good. I know that everybody is, you know, dealing with these things, and we don't always understand it all, but I mean, I guess we're still working within the system and got to do that and want to be fair to our horse. So it's wonderful that we have learned people out there that know the orthopedics and the, you know, the neuro workings of a horse, because we don't always, before we go too far too on extrinsic equipment, I was also curious, because you have a background also in PEMF, which is a big deal right now. It's, I see a lot of different versions of it and everything. And I thought maybe you could, you know, make sense of it for us, for those people who are not knowing what, you know, they might hear about it or might even see it happening in their barns. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think it's a great concept. And it's actually, it's been used in, there's a lot of clinical studies for people with PMS.
Yeah, let's back up for a second and start with, what does PEMF look like on a horse? Is that a light therapy, or is it something you rub on the horse, or, you know, what's happening when that's going on?
So there are different, it can be blankets. So you put that as a whole blanket, or you can just do the neck portion. You also have it for the legs or the hocks. It increases the blood circulation, and it's muscle relaxing. I worked with that kind of equipment for quite some time, and I saw some amazing. It's actually sometimes when it's a great warm up tool for the horses, actually. So in that sense, it's sort of, in my opinion, injury preventing.
That's brilliant. So yeah, so it's not just a therapy or to bring a horse back, you know, something medicinal.
Yeah, you can do both. There are different settings. Yeah, there are different settings, but you can also do it to warm them up, and you can do it also afterwards. Very interesting, I think.
So I've got a couple of veterinarians. I'm honored to have a couple of veterinarians that have bored their horses here too, and I've seen them using it quite often. But I thought, well, of course they do, because they know what they're doing. Is it something difficult? Can we mess up here, or is it something that you can't really?
No, not really. At least those devices I've seen, they're very, very user friendly. Very easy to use. It's sort of, I would see it as a more of a long-term treatment. So you use it maybe 2 to 3 times a week, or if they're traveling. It's also, I've seen people who use it successfully to prevent colic. So when it's, you know, an ice storm or anything like that, you can't let the horse out. I used to put it on my horse to have the blood circulation, and you can actually, they you will see that they actually poop when you put it on them.
That's amazing. That relaxation. So can you use it with other therapies? Like, you know, it's just some massage therapy. I'm thinking like Masterson method is a, you know, the bladder meridian and muscle release, I guess. Is it okay to use in conjunction?
Yes. You can do it as a combo. And there is actually, a very nice German product out there where you can use both the massage together with the PMS. And the horses love it.
Do they? I bet.
Yes,
I'm licking and chewing just thinking about it, you know. My eyes are growing soft right now. Yeah. What are some of the things that you look for, thinking of that, in your horse to show that they're, what are you looking for in your horse to show that they're happy?
I look for that there's no soreness. I always check the legs. I always palpate the back. I look that they have appetite. That's kind of the basics that I look for. There is actually, without being negative, just being certified, there is a lot of back soreness out there. These days.
It's true. No, it's true. And that's why I wanted to have, we are going to, here's some little inside information. We're going to have you out here for the movement in June, which I'm really excited about. And I hope you are too.
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also like, what I would like to see more in all disciplines is to work the horses by the hand more. You don't have to ride, and also to hack them out. Mm-hmm. Let them be horses. Mm-hmm. That I like, and you can work. You can do a lot with the horse without having to sit on it. It's nice for them, like that. Let the horses be horses.
I do too, Katerina. That's fantastic, and that's why we put our mountain trail in here too, because it gives you something else to do. I get it. I know everybody says I got to get out of the arena more, but sometimes we have a limited, lexicon of what does that look like. And I would love for you to bring ideas to the movement too about what we can do with our horses to let them be horses. That would be fascinating.
And I also, horses are herd animals. If we talked about Sweden, if we look at the many of the, and there are probably a lot here as well, but many of the top athletes, really top ones in Sweden, their horses are going together with a friend. Even the most expensive horses, they have a buddy.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I like that. So
I do too. I think we're getting closer. My producer Jen has been out here to our property and been to the movement too, and knows where our philosophy is trying to head. We're doing our bestest to create, you know, track systems where we can put horses together yet keep them moving in movement. We call it the movement for a lot of reasons. It's a movement away from violence and training, of course. That's the bottom line. But mostly it's about movement of the horses, you know, getting them out of the stalls, getting them into a situation where they can keep moving all day long, just like their digestive system does too. We won't even get into that today, but I love what you're doing to be fair to the horse and to make them more comfortable in anything that you do with your horse together. So how do people find you? How do they get a hold of you to learn more and find out what you do? And
yeah, so I have my company is called, so it's called Pure Equestrian. It's Pure is actually Katarina in Latin. So it's Katarina Equestrian LLC, but Pure Equestrian, I'm both on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
And I absolutely love what I do.
Yeah.
I really love it. It's just and the focus is sort of to help the horse to get in the, and sometimes the equipment that is best for the horse is not always what the rider was looking for. Mm-hmm. And then it is what it is, because some horses are really wide, they need a wider saddle. and so forth. So, but that's how,
fantastic.
That's
We'll go over, I'm excited to go over it in June with you, the basics when you're here presenting, but also some of the progressive stuff too. Sometimes we forget about the basics and we need to be reminded, but sometimes we want to know, you know, we don't want to get behind in this learned research that everybody is doing from Germany to Texas to California. And so we're going to share all that in June. And people can go on our website, montyroberts.com, and click on the shop and then special events, and they'll see tickets for the movement. And there's still room there. So people, we limit it to 50 and keep it intimate that way. But we're going to have some fun.
Monty likes to say that the concepts inherent in the language equus are based upon always giving the horse the power of choice. This is why he created his online university. So rehabbing and rehoming racehorses. You want to save them all. We get it. You will love this series with Monty and Jamie Jennings, host of Horses in the Morning and a certified Monty Roberts instructor out of Oklahoma. They work together on retraining ex-racehorses or off-the-track thoroughbreds for new purposeful careers. See this series at MontyRobertsUniversity.com.
See, Mao spent an early part of his life with horses and loved them until he developed allergies. You'll hear his story, but he has a background now in the film industry in Portugal and has now come over to Los Angeles to live out the dream of directing a movie that's futuristic about incorporating artificial intelligence and a future in horsemanship.
Today, I wanted to sit down with Simao to talk to you today, Simao, about why you're here. That's first. You can think about that for a second. And also what your goals are going forward. But what we all want to hear when we're listening to Horsemanship Radio basically is your horsey background. Because first of all, everybody wants to know everybody's horsey background on this. But second of all, there aren't that many guys with horsey backgrounds anymore. It's more and more women in this world. But I don't know if that's true in Portugal. So tell us a little bit about your horsey background. And were you unusual?
Wow. Horsey background. If I was unusual, I don't know. I guess I was unusual because I started riding at around 8 years of age.
Okay.
Got in my first horse, probably a small pony at six. But at around 10, 11, 12, I can't really pinpoint the age. I developed this huge allergy to all.
So you did
all mammals, really.
Oh, all
hairy mammals.
Not just horses.
Not just horses.
Oh,
cats too. And I'm, And it was a shame because I really wanted to be a veterinarian. Oh. My heroes were Ace Ventura, Dr. Doolittle, and Crocodile Dundee. So I loved animals in general. But horse is such a large mammal. And I've had 20 more years to think about this, and I've been thinking about it more for the past year or less. This year, it started this year again with some newfound inspiration to write a movie.
To write a movie. So you've jumped from, you want to be in horses, but you've got huge allergies. So you've taken the last 20 years to think about where you do want to go now without the ability to
reach. It took me 20 years to not to contemplate where I was going, but to reach the point of today and this year where I say, I'm getting horses back in my life because this is my, if I feel this inspired, and sometimes we talk about inspiration as something that makes us feel young again, makes mm-hmm. us go back to our youth. Mm-hmm. So when I was with this other person with whom I'm very passionate about mm-hmm. making art, and I opened a book, probably the first book I ever bought, called Son of the Wind, about the Lusitano pure breed and the Soraya horse.
Yes, we will talk about that. I'd like to hear more about that, yeah.
And just thought, this is just my path. Someone has shown me, how can I feel this strong emotion about what I have to do? Mm-hmm. And it's related with horses. And it just matches with my really youthful happiness.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And it's, so that's what got me in here. And I had the proposition to come to California for other subjects related to my other interests. Like I am, after all, a movie maker.
Right.
So it felt right to come to LA. I had a friend advise me that had some passion that said you should come. But really it just became about this. The most important part of this trip was this. And I didn't even know it. I already had the flight and it just all matched perfectly. And
the dates just lined
the
up.
The harmony of my life. So
had you heard of Monty Roberts before? Because you're a filmmaker in Portugal, and Portugal is not pervasively natural horsemanship yet.
It's not.
If we can call it that.
It's not. I mean, natural horsemanship. In fact, I'm away from the horse world. I'm just going back to the horse world. But I do see and I do think that this natural horsemanship is the natural evolved way where we humans are ethically evolving to be more peaceful, most of us.
I hope so.
Yes, we are learning. It's not, talking about humans and peace is a very lengthy subject, and entropy of the universe and thermodynamics is all,
You're getting over my head now.
It gets in the middle. Yeah.
But horses are so basic, right?
We do want to be kinder to one another. Right. This is an evolving of human thought, even though we have examples that show us that we're not there. We really know that this is the way.
Very good.
So in this, and we're all humans, and it does show up, and we know that people that like horses at a certain point, or animals in general, we don't want to mistreat them. We want to make them not human because they're there to also to be useful for us. We're here to cooperate. Every human is there to be useful to the other human. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? That's how we establish our networks.
That's right. Yeah. And horses need us. I mean, you can't get past that. They need us.
Yeah, this is not a wildness anymore, and they are. Yeah,
I think they deserve to be understood.
And we needed them.
And we need them. Exactly.
And our civilization has only thrived, is this correct? Thrived?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
From using them, from cooperating with them.
Developed from that.
Yeah.
Developed from horses. So when you signed up for the Monty Special Training, that's what you particularly took this last week, and you knew that it would be generally good horsemanship, right? Taught good horsemanship.
Yes.
What did you glean from it that surprised you?
Glean.
Well, what did you learn? What did you absorb from it that you thought was
surprising? I absorbed that it seemed that I wasn't crazy and that I could really do it. Mm-hmm. Because I had this girlfriend with whom I had what I thought was going to be a wedding, a marriage relationship.
Oh, very close, yeah.
It was very close, but it didn't get there. We all make mistakes. But her father, he was a big horseman, and he did sell horses. I remember the story. He sold horses to the king of Morocco, for example. So I guess he's really good in the... And he did made his life. He lived in a truck with a horse for a long period, doing shows. And so a guy that lives out of horses, and I would expect him to love them. In fact, and he had this... the approach, the classic macho that I've been reading about before I came to Montes, I read a few books. And I realized that there was this difference between the macho, oh, the horse is a dumb animal approach, to something that I felt was what I felt in my heart. And when I went there and rode his horse and rode with him on the paddock and he was giving me instructions and all that, which I would evidently try to obey as best as I can, because this man is much more experienced and knows much more than me. But my attitude towards the animal was different. It was not I did not want to dominate. I never felt like I needed. I did learn that as a rider. Just stand up straight, show them who's boss. Yeah. You have to be heavy on top of him. Show them that you're stable. But of course, it's a leadership thing. It's not like I'm dominating you. It's like I'm showing you that I am worthy of being on top of you, mm-hmm. and I'm worthy to be carried, of being carried by you.
Interesting.
And that's what I wanted to, and also relax a little bit on the horse, not be so uptight, just relax a little bit, just go with it. If there's no rush, if we're not racing, you know, just let the horse just go on top. And I felt like, oh, man, I really feel this. I really feel that what I feel about this is right, but I don't have confirmation that this could be true. Mm. And here I kind of did.
You did. You got confirmation.
That my philosophy, what I think that should be our relationship with nature and other animals is this. We really make an effort to communicate with them.
So a lot of people think that what Dad has imparted to the horse, or what he's learned from the horse too, is that it's more our feminine side or whatever. It's a more nurturing side. But I don't know. I see a lot of men who have breakthrough performance with their horses, and I would say it's closer to a partnership rather than a mother-child nurturing kind of thing. It's closer to a partnership of two athletic people and a person and a horse, two athletic beings that have decided on a set of principles that they want to learn and perform in. And there were two guys in the class, and there were two instructors that were male. So two male students, which is a little unusual, frankly, in a smaller class, and two instructors that are male. Miguel Lupiano from Brazil.
That's a big male.
It's a big male. He's a big guy. Thank goodness, because we had a big starter, didn't we?
Yeah.
Ebony.
Oh, she's beautiful. That Ebony is beautiful.
Beautiful. Frisian.
What a beautiful
with
horse.
Something in her, maybe
so
some Arabian
nice.
Or something. Beautiful starter. It'll be a beautiful lesson. And then there is Dad, who calls himself a cowboy, right? Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think there's something more to it than just... Okay, so when we went to Portugal, we went on tour in Portugal to three cities. This is years ago, because we were not invited to Portugal a lot. Yeah, and you should know this, that the tour promoter was German, but she was living in Portugal.
Anna Kershoff.
No. Oh, but she's lovely. No,
she
Anna Kirchhoff. Yeah, she's lovely. It was before her.
I'm going to visit
her
name when I get to Portugal.
Oh,
when
I'm
I go
so
back,
glad. You'll love her.
I'm going down and meet her and
Anna
say, hey,
Kirchhoff
I was in the
DeSacchi. She married a veterinarian.
DeSacchi. Oh.
DeSacchi. Uh-huh. Anna Kirchhoff DeSacchi.
Ah, exactly.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Kirchhoff
and it was before that. This lady's name was Simone.
Mm-hmm.
Simone.
Simone.
But she was from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, okay, we want to have Monty over here because he's very famous, but I don't want all that kissing and hugging stuff.
Yeah, we kiss and hug a lot. It's a Latin thing.
I don't know.
It's a Latin thing. Is it? Come from the Roman Empire.
Okay, okay. So what I guess my question for you from Portugal, you just flew in from Lisbon,
yes,
right?
I flew in, yeah.
Is do they still believe that this technique that Dad uses is kissing and hugging on their horses, or?
Oh, that's what they said, the kissing. Oh, I interpreted it wrong because Portuguese love to kiss and hug when they greet.
Well, it's a very people, though. But with the horses, I'm not so sure.
Oh, who said that?
This lady, this promoter for us. And she was a wonderful promoter. She did great over there. But there was a lot of skepticism about having a relationship with your horse in a partnership or otherwise.
I can't say. I'm not so much inside that the horsemanship, the Portuguese horsemanship.
That's okay.
I am an artist that went after his passion, and I'm not in the circle. I do not belong in the Equitador circle, but I am making contact with people, and I'm making contact, and I approached the more, so I should talk about one of the inspirations for my movie, which is a man that in the 1920s was just riding his horse along the Tagus River, and finding the Soraya horse, which we spoke about before a little bit, and which is what the Portuguese scientists, archaeologists, which maybe are two or three, are researching about this horse that this man, Rui de Andrade, found. And I'm sorry if my sentencing is not very clear. So Rui de Andrade rode along the Tagus River and found lots of specimens of this apparently 3,000-year-old horse. Well, or 3,000 is the 2,000 plus 1,500 is what we think was
the history of
horse riding in the peninsula.
Okay.
This very ancient species of horse that can be tracked for by around those dates, but as I can say, I don't know the details of the scientific research, but they are looking for this ancestrality on this breed.
To
try to track it on the history of horse riding. And the importance of that region's docile and physically adaptive to that terrain horse, which was willingly a horse that the Carthaginians and the Greeks imported and bred so they could be at the same military level as the steppes and Arabic counterparts.
Okay. So these were war horses
These were horses that were, yes, that's the Lusitan pure breed, as
right.
many people say, is a breeding of an autochthonous horse.
Yes.
Throughout these hundreds of years that had that zone, that denomination, and it is specially bred for battle in what is not long distance charges, but close combat. And it has to do, this is what these passionate people about the military also invent stories on what they want. But you look at the empirical evidence of what the horse is capable of doing, and you, you can believe this story, right?
100%.
So, and on the same subject, if we are to accept the theory of the Mustang coming with the ships that came from Europe and all this horsemanship development, which would make sense in my mind, they would also come from the Middle East, because at some point you would gather up resources, whatever they were, human in Africa, probably came mixed up with horses too. Some bear horses had to cross, some Arabic, so it's not. But it's still, I don't know why I digressed so much into this, but, oh, the Soraya horse.
Yes.
And it's just a beautiful horse. I wanted to talk about it.
So it's a breed. Soraya is a breed.
It's a breed. Mm-hmm. And it's the autochthonous horse of the Iberian Peninsula.
Iberian, okay.
And it's a beautiful gray and golden horse.
I mean, what would they be used for?
They're being used for horse and healing. Because, yes, they're apparently very... So that's the romantic idea, is that they have this personality, which is actually what here at Monty, all horses have that same personality. Mm-hmm. This, what I'm saying, is just the perspective of the people that study this horse with their passion for their land and their country and their culture, and knowing this is our horse. And how proud are we that our horse is an ancestor, a very likely ancestor to many other Western riding horses. So nice.
So we're talking like they went to South America with the Criollos, came over here for the Mustangos.
And they bred with the Arabs. Mm-hmm. So the Lusitano has to have a little bit of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you've got Andalusia over there, Iberian horses.
Iberian. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Spanish horse. This Lusitano horse really is the Spanish. It's like it's like wine, no? It's a little mm-hmm. bit.
Appalachians. Kind of like Appalachians.
Yeah. So they bred over there, so that's why their name. And they do, they have this special personality. Mm-hmm. It's a regional thing. Mm-hmm. They have the right for their, their own.
yes, like people. So, there's something about that warm climb down there in Southern Europe, too, that it has its own personalities, too. So tell us a little bit about this movie that you will make. Don't tell us everything, because I know it's not. It's still being cooked, you know.
It's actually. I want to make a movie that is a very good homage to the horse. I'm not going to enter in artistic details, because I would like to keep it.
No, don't give us away. Yeah, definitely. You have to tease us for this.
If I'm lucky enough to make the listener interested in what I have to say further, I definitely keep that as a surprise. Judge me later, please.
Done.
Not now.
But you're involved in the movie industry, so you do have the ability to do this.
I have the ability.
This one you want to direct, though, right?
Yes, exactly. Looking at the horse, looking at such a magnificent, muscular being that allows us to... How can you believe that there's... That a large herbivore mammal can put his head over your shoulder and just follow you around just because you're there? It's beautiful.
Well, they're big and strong and fast. We talk about that a lot. It's such a difference in their motivation.
They give us space. They let us.
They do. I can't believe how far they come our way to be with us.
Yes. It's... but you can believe when you come here. If you come here,
I see it all the time.
or you think, oh my Lord, how are these human beings capable of such thing? And then Monty says, no, but this is just how they do it. I just know that this is like this, and everyone can do it. Mm-hmm. And that's so inspiring.
It is. You saw Mustangs this week. You saw Friesian this week. You saw Thoroughbreds this week.
Saw
everything, didn't you?
I saw a lot of variety. I saw the progression of the work with the horse, because in these 5 days you could have a horse, and then 2 days after you have the same horse, and you see how its behavior. I don't know if I should call it a it now. Now that I've met them. But yeah. I like that very much. And I wanted to jump in.
Did you?
No. Yes, of course. You come with sometimes. Yeah, that's a thing to reflect on, because I came with a hint of desire to fulfill my pleasurely needs of touching the horse and of putting in practice immediately what I learned. Mm-hmm. But then you really I'm just appreciative of what I'm absorbing and knowing that I can always practice it later. Mm-hmm. So there is this uneasiness, but you put it under control.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to know that you come here to learn all this, and you will be limited if you think that because of your wanting to participate will just hinder a process that is unfolding before your eyes, and you'll learn to... It's very good to come here and learn about yourself, I guess.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm so glad to hear sort of the arc of how you spent your week, but also the arc of how you love horses from a little child all the way to today, dedicating a week of your life in a busy life to being more in touch with horses. Thank you.
Whisper the language of the herd. Listen, you don't have to say a word.
It's time for Jamie Jennings to fetch an email from Monty Roberts' inbox and share a morsel of Monty's wisdom in a little segment we like to call Ask Monty.
Leave this world a better place than mine. The magic in the language of the
herd. Dear Monty, how does someone introduce your methods to the people who would sing the praises of traditional methods, suggesting that horses need to be shown who is boss? These people would suggest that the whip is helpful and immediate punishment is an effective way to train. Monty's answer. I think that the key to answering this question is to say that I would like my horses to do the talking for me. I believe that if I hold true to my concepts, the horses will continue to learn and perform well. There is no forcing the traditional horseman to accept my concepts. Just as I work without forcing a horse to do anything, I will never demand that another equestrian use my techniques. I would much prefer to be a good role model, advocating a nonviolent approach to training and experiencing cooperative horses in return for that effort. What we mean by traditional methods. There have been many horsemen over the centuries that have worked traditionally but have minimized pain and violence, and many others who have maximized those elements. Traditional horsemanship, as I saw it while growing up, was virtually all done with what I would term extreme violence. Consequently, when I use the term traditional, it refers to methods which include what I would consider to be brutal treatment. It seems to me quite clear that there are a percentage of old school horsemen who will choose to go on using harsh techniques throughout their days. So long as their methods are legal, then there is very little that anybody can do about them. We are at a peculiar spot in the evolution of horsemanship because there are areas on this earth where certain actions are illegal while they are accepted in other locations. It is still legal to rope a horse by his legs in most part of the United States, but illegal in some areas. It is still considered acceptable to forfoot a horse in Mexico, but it'll put you in jail in California. Forfooting is the act of roping the front feet while the horse is in full gallop. This causes the horse to fall head first into the ground. And this procedure was deemed illegal in the state of California, but only within the past 10 years. The world is changing faster than the generations are rolling by. This results in cultural variations from one geographical area to another. While I support whipless racing in the United States, there are still certain racing communities that levy a fine on the jockey if he doesn't whip his mount. Scandinavia, however, has virtually banned the whip altogether. Germany has a soft, spongy Nerf whip for use on two-year-olds. Apparently, horsemen in these countries have come to realize that giving the horse a positive experience in the early stages of its racing career is more effective than causing it pain. If you want to have a fight with the traditional horseman, just go up to him when he's trying to load a difficult horse after a show. Tell them that he doesn't have to use harsh techniques like whips and sticks, brooms, twitches, etc. When you wake up with a black eye, you may realize it wasn't effective to confront a violent person in the act of brutality. Some of my students have been known to offer assistance. Once in a while, this works. But most of the time, it will get them an earful of profanity and invitation to leave the area at once. I suppose it'll suit me well to just keep doing my demonstrations, thus showing people that the horses have the final say in all of this. And if they respond favorably, it is likely that we'll have a good chance of seeing significant change in the next generation of horse people.
For more of these insights into good horsemanship, go to MontyRoberts.com and click on the words Ask Monty at the bottom of the page.
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in June of 2024. We have June 8th, a mountain trail play day. Then June 10th through 14th, we have a Gentling Wild Horse course. And that's getting full, so make sure if you're interested in June, grab it now. And then June 21 through 23 is the movement. Jen's been there. This is our 7th annual. Really excited about it. But again, people are buying those tickets in 2s and 3s right now, and we cap it at 50. So if you're coming, come now, and I'll help you find some places to stay. And in July, we have 8 through 12, the Monty Special Training. Advance warning, we also have an introductory course of the certification process in August. So where do we go to find that out?
All of that can be found at MontyRoberts.com, your one-stop shop for everything Equus University, everything Monty Roberts, everything California Horse Center, everything Horsemanship Radio Podcast. It's all there. Or you can be old school. You can call them on the phone at 805-688-6288. And for details about today's show, if you don't want to go to MontyRoberts.com, you can go to HorsemanshipRadio.com. That's the specific website where all of the podcasts are found, all 256 episodes, and you can find links and photos and more information about today's guests and topics. As always, we love your feedback. Please follow Monty Roberts on Facebook. It's Monty Roberts, the one with a little blue check mark. On Twitter, as well as Instagram, it's Monty_Roberts. And Debbie posts lots of really cool fun stuff on Instagram.
It is good. We're getting a lot of good feedback on that, too. And thank you, Drew. Many thanks to our sponsors as well. That's Jay Michelson at HandsOnGloves.com. Be sure to visit all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.